You're listening to the Rubbish Trip Podcast. Two no-waste nomads talk trash with people in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Recently, the Rubbish Trip took part in a repair cafe running out of Kapiti Community Centre, organised by Kapiti Coast District Council as part of their Number 8 Wire Week. Throughout the day, members of the public came to have all sorts of items fixed, including broken clothes and electrical appliances. Volunteers were at the ready to help out, including sewers, electricians, IT specialists, and members of the Kapiti Men's Shed. As tools whirred in the background and attendees chatted over cups of tea and home baking, we took the time to chat with Peter, Treasurer of Men's Shed Kapiti, and Johanna, the Events Coordinator at the Kapiti Community Centre, about the work that both of them are doing in the community. Kia ora, Peter. Thanks for talking with us today. Peter Blacklett is the Treasurer of the Men's Shed, and he's going to be talking with us today about what the Men's Shed does and what the purpose behind it is and his own role. So can you tell us a little bit about what Men's Shed is?
Well, yeah, we're Men's Shed Kapiti, and so Men's Shed is essentially there to, in the first place, to for the health and well-being of the men in the community. You know, the women have lots of groups and things that they can join over their time, but men, there's not too many groups. You can play golf if you want to, or bowls, but a lot of men want to do other things, and a lot of the men have had access to workshops, although some of them haven't, and when they, particularly when they retire, they're looking for something else to do and involve their time, and the women say, well, get out from under my feet. And so the Men's Shed is there for the health and well-being of the men, and have a well-equipped workshop. And it provides them with access to workshop facilities where they can practice their own workshop skills, learn new skills from others, pass on their skills. And some of the men come along, have never been in a workshop before, and it's the first opportunity. And so they very quickly learn to get taken in hand and learn what to do, and away they go.
Cool. So in these workshops, are you working with all kinds of materials, or is it like woodwork, electrical?
Yeah, it's mainly woodwork, because what we find is that a lot of the, we get most of our tools and things are donated from people at deceased estates. Widows ring up and say, we've got this shed full of tools and stuff here that my husband's left, and do you want it? Others are downsizing into a townhouse and can't take their workshops with them. And so we get called in to go and pick up these tools and equipment and timber and all sorts of things. Most of it is woodworking stuff. But we also have got getting an engineering shop developed. We managed to pick up a very good metal turning lathe and a milling machine. We've got welders and drills and all that sort of thing. So we're well equipped for woodwork and also for metalwork.
And the men that you work with, do they tend to be sort of older generation retired, or do you have various people of different ages come through and pass on skills, or how does that work?
Most of the men that have come along to the shed are retired, because they now have time to get involved in other activities. But we're open to all men. And we have had some of the younger fellows come along, particularly when they're in between jobs. And we've had one or two bring their sons along during the school holidays, and there's one guy that used to come along, and he's now got a very good apprenticeship down the road here in a joinery factory.
So it's also sort of a way people can train up almost for a pre-job sort of thing.
Yeah, and we have had one or two come from the colleges that weren't too keen on their schoolwork, come along to the Men's Shed, and then they get going quite well, and improves their schoolwork activities as well, because it gives them a bit of mentoring from the older guys. They can learn how to use some of their practical skills and all that sort of thing. So works very well.
And so the things that people make in the Men's Shed, is that usually for, you know, personal things that they want to make, or do you ever make things for the community?
It varies quite a bit across the different sheds throughout New Zealand, but our shed, I suppose 95% or more of our work is on community projects.
Oh, wow.
Some of the guys bring in some of their own things to do, but not very many. And most of it is for community groups, kindergartens, schools, all sorts. And also people come in the gate with bits of broken furniture or chairs or whatever want repaired, and so or knives and garden tools sharpened.
And this is all just a community service. There's no money involved or anything, is there? Or what's the deal with that?
The money wise, if we have to buy materials to do a project, and that cost gets passed onto the customer, and then we like to receive some sort of a donation. Some of the donations are quite generous, others are fairly small. But for a lot of the individuals come in, the ladies bring in their chairs or whatever to be repaired, we say, oh, and if it doesn't take too much work, we say, oh, well, cakes and scones are more than welcome. and so the guys down there get pretty well fed, because we start the day with a bit of a roundup and a brief and a cup of tea, coffee and that sort of thing, and cakes and scones. Some of the guys bring fresh batches of scones or pikelets, and then we get the biscuits and things. They're fairly well fed.
Nice. So you have a couple of times a week at the workshop. Do you ever go out into the community as well and do work out?
At the moment, we operate two mornings a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. It used to be from 10 o'clock to about 12. Now they're at the gate at 9 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes they're there till 1 or 2 o'clock, although they do like to get home for their lunch. We have done other projects away from the shed, but it's much better if we can do it at the shed, then that's what we like to do, because all the gear is there, all the materials are there, and it becomes fairly difficult to get the guys to come away from the shed to do things. But we have been out and do things. One of the latest examples is, if you go to the Queen Elizabeth Park down at Pycock, you'll see a rebuilt US Marine Army hut. And I've got some pictures of it there, but that was rebuilt in time for the 75th anniversary of the Marines arriving in Pycock at the end of May.
I was reading your brochure before, and you mentioned it, like having the opportunity to do some of this community work and come to the workshop can give men a sense of purpose. Do you find that is an issue for men in the community, sometimes feeling like they don't have a sense of purpose?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that's one of the important things, is to give the guys something to get up in the morning for, that they can come and really do something meaningful. Also to mix with and have a good chat and sit down and have a chat with like-minded men. And it's makes a big difference to some of the guys, particularly the ones that are on their own or lost their partners and things. And without the shed, some of them have admitted they would be quite lost.
So if somebody wants to join up, do they just simply have to go along to their closest men's shed? Is it as simple as that?
Yes, most of them, yes. In our case, they just come in the gate, and if they like the look of us and can cope with the hustle and bustle, and then we give them a form and they can sign up. It costs them all of $20 a year.
That's pretty reasonable.
some of the others, we're lucky we've got reasonable space there, although it's we need more workshop, which I'm working on. But some of the other sheds are in much more confined spaces, and so they need to limit some of their membership.
So what are some of the things you're working on at the moment, the shed?
Oh, well, we've just finished that US Marine hut. Again, early in the year, we did all the memorial crosses for the soldiers for the First World War for the Wellington area. They went into the Botanic Gardens in Wellington there. This year we assembled and sorted 1,500 odd crosses. Next year we've got another 1,800 to do. And that was a very interesting and sobering project to work on. Wetter motels is something that is in big demand, and we got two guys producing those on a continuous basis, and they get put all around the place, and schools and kindergartens and others, and the kids get these and hang them up in the trees and then watch for the wetters to come. Small barbecue type tables for the kids, where they can seat four kids around, and for the kindergartens and so forth. And they again, we've got two guys more or less working full time on those. The other things there, guys are busy landscaping the site up at Waikanae there. Got some great vegetables gardens going, we're kaka nesting boxes. We built a number of those for Doc a couple of years ago, and then we made more last year. And in the nesting process, the kaka ripped the insides to pieces to build new nests in the bottom, and so those come back for refurbishment, and so we they will make timber lining inside, so we have to refurbish those each year. That's the inside of these kaka nesting boxes, and you can see how it's been all torn to pieces here.
Oh, I see.
And so we've got to rebuild that to fit inside a great big pipe that sits up on the tree.
Oh, nice.
Gee, they make a mess of those things.
They do. This guy here is very skilled in repairing furniture and stuff, and one lady brought in some cane chairs that were... The cane was starting to unravel, so he's done a magnificent job in restoring those, but he's also done all sorts of other ones of repairing chairs and furniture legs and things. That's just some of the things.
Oh, that's a great range of projects going.
So this is a model for the People's Ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Wellington Free Ambulance want to raise money for what they're calling a People's Ambulance. And so they wanted something that they could use for fundraising. They came to us and asked us if we could do a model. Well, I thought, it was just going to be a bit of a model. But no, they said they wanted a big model. Something that in the form of a jigsaw that kids could put together. So this is made up of about 50... grape boxes. The Pack and Save supermarket down here, they gave us all these boxes. The print company up the road here, they did the print of the picture for the ambulance service and then cut it up into the small things, and these are all individual bits stuck onto boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And these boxes are all stacked up, and so the idea is that the kids can come along and build this ambulance from there as a jigsaw.
Oh, that's so cool.
So that was great. That was just finished a couple of weeks ago, and the launch for that is this evening in Newtown.
Oh, cool.
That's fantastic.
That's so beautiful. And you just also mentioned the thing about the grape boxes. So in the shed, with the materials you work with, are a lot of them sort of rescued or upcycled kind of materials that you get given?
Oh, yeah. A lot of the smaller works we do is all the recycled materials. One of the aluminium door companies up here, they have all the packing crates and so forth is made up out of 2x1 rough form timber.
Mm-hmm.
It would normally go to scrap or get cut up for firewood.
Mm.
We can put that through the planers and clean it all up, and we make all sorts of things with that. But when we get asked to go and clean out a garage of things, there's usually always a lot of timber and stuff there.
Mm.
And so we've got timber and things all around the place. Some of the uses for this recycled timber, the community patrol had this notice board. They wanted that into a frame, so all that framework is just recycled timbers.
Mm.
Again, the disability group wanted somewhere to hold all the walking sticks, so that would have been made out of recycled materials.
So how many men's sheds are there in New Zealand?
At the moment, there's last count, I think around about 120. And there's those numbers are continuing to grow on a regular basis. I'm working with a lady down in Pairua to get one going there. There's another group wanting to start one in Tawa. They're all just coming up all the time.
That sounds like a great initiative. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
That's great.
It's great to hear about the men's shed. It sounds like you're doing wonderful things. And hopefully we'll we'll see some things in action today at the Repair Cafe.
Yes, it's just a great thing, and it's a bit of a companion thing, because what I tell people is to look at the national website, see where all the men's sheds are. If you're travelling around, go and see the men's shed, and you'll be more than welcome at any men's shed.
It's a bit of a national network.
It is.
With Johanna from the Kapiti Community Centre. Johanna is the events coordinator here, and Kapiti Community Centre has been doing lots of exciting things lately, so we're going to be learning a little bit about them. So thanks for talking with us.
No worries.
So we were just having a brief chat, and one of the things you were telling us about is the Fusion event you did recently.
Yes.
So could you tell us a little bit about that?
So in March this year, we ran a big event. We ran called Fusion, which was the whole idea behind it was to get cultures that are already operating within the Kapiti area together, and we wanted to give them a platform where they could showcase what it is that makes their culture really shine, so that locals that already live here could come and meet these people, learn a bit about their culture, try their food, see a performance maybe, and have their eyes opened a little bit to what it's like for someone to move from, let's say, a part of Asia to New Zealand, and how they go about resettling, what the challenges are, what wonderful things they then bring to our area that we can embrace and adopt. It was a whole day. We had a really good time. All the food sold out. There were performances. People stayed for hours and they sat and they watched, and it was really enjoyable. And it gave some of our local small cultural communities an opportunity to just show who they are and let people know that they're here. So that's what we did.
And what was the kind of motivation behind doing the event like this as a community centre? Was it partly related to wanting to reach out to various parts of the community?
We're always looking for gaps, I guess, where we see that something isn't really happening already in the community where we can fill that need. We know that there are other wonderful initiatives happening locally, and so we don't want to double up on what someone else is doing when it's already really successful. So we saw that this was something that was kind of, we didn't see a whole lot of that around, so we thought, hey, let's do that. We've seen it done really well in Wellington, but it is a long way to go and not everyone travels, so we thought, can we do something on a smaller scale and do that in our own area? Which was great. We also did a video project as part of that, where we interviewed, I think it was 8 or 6 people that had moved to Kapiti from overseas, and we interviewed them and just learnt a little bit about their experience, what they'd found great, what they'd found hard, why they picked Kapiti. And it was really interesting hearing about the different things that they've dealt with from home. One of the women, she's from Brazil, she talked about that she can't take her kids to the playground and sit and watch them. She has to be within an arm's distance of them because safety is a really big issue in Brazil, which is something I just would never consider having to deal with myself in New Zealand. We forget how safe we are, really, in comparison to other parts of the world. So it was so interesting hearing where they'd come from, and that she moved here because she wanted her kids to have a better life, and you know that how privileged we are that we have that at our doorstep. So really interesting. Yeah.
And have you had positive feedback from the community, different community groups involved, about being part of the Fusion event?
We've had people saying, oh, so what's the date for next year? Yeah. And also out of that, we've actually been able to strike up some great community relationships. So we run courses here at the community centre. For example, we run a dumplings course. We can come and learn how to make dumplings. And so we got a tutor out of that from one of those groups, which is just great because it's a really good relationship for us to have going forward.
Yeah.
And same with activities. We're always looking for tutors for the children's programs or things like that, so it's an easy way for us to network and then be able to teach our community something else and say, oh, you saw this at Fusion, you can now come and learn how to do sugar art at a kids program or something like that. So yeah, it's been really beneficial.
Great.
Yeah.
also, alongside the fusion events, you have also been, like, completely different thing.
Yeah.
You've been doing boomerang bags.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yes, so that's an initiative that's been running from Australia for quite some time. And Hannah, who was one of the other staff members from the community centre, she saw that it would be something really cool to run here and that we were a good-sized community that would be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started off with the idea, and we've ended up with a group of probably about 70 people that are sort of tied in together, who get our updates and that kind of thing. So what we do is we run sewing bees here at the community centre. People bring their machines down and we make these bags, and we then sell them at two stockists locally. We sell them for $2 each, and we sell them to try and encourage people to use them instead of a plastic bag at the supermarket, or a plastic bag if they go to the library, or anything really that you're going to use a carry bag. So far it's been really great. We've just hit 300. We've been going for about 6 weeks, so it's pretty exciting. We've got a couple of very, very keen and very talented sewers,
mm-hmm,
that sew with a friend at home, and then they bring their bags in, and it's really cool, and people are very creative and they come up with great designs and things, so it's been a lot of fun.
And where do you get your fabric from? Is that local, from around Kapiti?
Pretty much everything we've needed for the boomerang bags, mostly, has been donated by local businesses. So Spotlight donated an overlocker and a sewing machine. We got fabric. We've had fabric from all sorts of places, from Lewis's curtaining, from a dance studio, Judith Fuge Dance Studio. She donated fabric. We've had people that just have been sitting on fabric at home for that project that they never did.
Never got
around. And so they've brought that in. It's just been so cool having local businesses see our Facebook posts and then call us, and we go and pick up, you know, stuff. It's been really neat. And the upholstery place just on Hacker Street, they donated some stuff as well. So it's been really, really neat having our community see what we're doing and then support us with what they can.
Yeah. Apart from people doing things at home with friends and stuff, do you have kind of community sewing bees and things
like
that? Yes.
So we run them monthly on a Sunday, and we advertise them on our website under our Boomerang Bags page. We ran them weekly for a period of time when we were running another initiative called Take the Pledge, but just to bring up a stock of bags. But at the moment we run the monthly ones here, but we're always happy to have people come into the centre and sew. So if you don't want to sew at home, or you want to get five of you together and that's too cozy for your lounge, we're really negotiable about having people come in and use the space here.
Yeah.
We typically have done that on a Friday afternoon, which has been a slower time for us.
Yeah.
And so we have a little gaggle of women in here, and they've got the machines going, and we've got cups of tea on the run, and it's really fun.
Yeah.
It's really enjoyable to kind of bond over a project, but also have some community spirit going.
Yeah.
And do you see skill sharing going on in those sewing bees?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so one woman was talking about her doing a French stitch, and the other one's talking about an Italian stitch. I've got no idea what the difference is. And so they do, and they come up with good ideas of, this is a way that we can do something easier, or this is an easy way to make this shape, or things like that. So it's great for a novice like myself who has no sewing experience, and I'm happy to have someone else give me some guidelines and steer me in the right direction.
It's cool. So there are different levels of skill or experience with sewing and stuff.
Yeah, we had a woman bring her daughter in. She's homeschooled, so she could come during the day, and they came in and they made labels. So there's stamping, or you can make tags, or there's lots of stuff that can still be done, and you can be part of the merriment, I guess. But you don't necessarily have to have a degree in sewing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Taking the pledge.
Yes.
So now tell us about this.
So I ran two pledges. One of them is still running. So I did a kids edition and an adults edition. And the whole idea behind them was to try and encourage people to be a little bit more mindful of the rubbish that they're creating. However, we didn't want to overwhelm people and sort of be like, you're bad, you create rubbish, the world is going to blow up. You know, because it can be very overwhelming when you look at the effect that we're having on our planet. So we wanted to pick a couple of key things and focus on those to give people a starting point. So for the kids one, we did, I contacted Sistema New Zealand, and they sold us their 1.65 litre bento lunch boxes, which is the lunch boxes that have the little compartments in them. So they sent those down for a really good price, and we were able to sell those lunch boxes for, or that pledge, for $5 per child, for, per pledge.
Gosh, that's a good deal.
So normally if you buy the lunch box from the warehouse, it's about $16.
Oh, cool.
So I ordered 100 and crossed all my digits and really hoped that I was going to be able to sell them by the time I finished up at the centre to go on maternity leave, and I sold them in 48 hours.
Whoa, 48 hours.
Yeah.
And how
so,
many did you say?
100.
100.
Wow. So I then ordered a second 100, and they came down, and they sold out in 8 hours. So we just barreled through them. It was really cool. It was so exciting. We had all these people coming in, and kids were coming and picking their colour, and it was really fun. So we were encouraging the kids to do rubbish-free lunches. So if we could give them the tools to do it, and they could tackle one thing, it, in the hope that going forward they would then learn that habit. So instead of using their Glad wrap, they can, you know, put it in the compartments of their lunch boxes and that kind of thing. That was the idea. We got great support from schools. They said, oh, what a cool initiative. So I know that a school in Otaki, I think last year, supplied all their kids with a lunchbox in the hope of doing the same thing. They wanted to be a rubbish-free school. So yeah, it was really neat. So and inside the lunchbox you got some lunchbox suggestions of different things for your mum or dad to make, because often you open the pantry and can't think of anything other than a sandwich, an apple and a biscuit. And so it had some ideas in there, and a magnet saying that they'd committed to rubbish-free lunches. That was the kids one. And the adults one is, for $12 you could get a boomerang bag and then a reusable keep cup. And we got those from Ideal Cups in Wellington. They make their cups in Wellington, so they're New Zealand made. And they gave us a really good price on those as well. They're normally $20 each, and we're able to sell the pledge for $12, and you get to choose your cup and your colours, put it together, and
they get a boomerang bag too, right?
A boomerang bag as well. Yep, so a bag and a cup and a magnet saying that they're committing to rubbish-free coffee and rubbish-free shopping. So the idea is that you would take your bag instead of grabbing a one-use supermarket plastic bag, and use your keep cup instead of getting a coffee cup from the coffee shop. And I always find that your keep cup gets a little bit more coffee than your takeaway coffee cup. It's kind of a win.
Yeah. And so, some places give you discounts.
Yeah, they do. So that's been going really well. We've sold over half of our adults' pledges so far, and we're still selling those because we rolled the kids' one out first. It's been really successful. So it's been really neat to see people's enthusiasm, get excited about a couple of different projects, get involved.
You've obviously got a bit of a waste focus in some of those events, and is that in response to community demand, kind of interest in that, or was that more driven from you seeing that as something that the, you know, that the centre wanted to tackle?
The centre's always been quite mindful of waste. Like, we have a worm farm here that we got through the council, which kids love to come in and look at. Yeah, I think it's something that the community centre's always felt quite passionate about, but it's been about trying to figure out how we can incorporate that with other things that we do, because we also are very focused on making things affordable for families, and so often the two don't go together really, really well. So it's trying to figure out ways where we can do that in a way that is beneficial. So, and we wanted to pick things that hit people where they were at, rather than rolling out an initiative that we think sounds really cool but there isn't a need for. Saying, where is there a gap and how can we fill it, and going about it that way. So trying to be really community focused rather than just our ideas focused.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was important to us. So,
and we noticed that your water dispenser doesn't have any plastic cups with it.
No.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, we used to supply plastic cups. I actually think we started out with polystyrene cups, and then we moved to plastic sort of recyclable cups that were sort of supposed to be a green version. And then as we barreled through them, because we do have classes that come in here and they use the water cooler, we kind of looked at each other and said, why are we supplying the cups? You know, we've got a fully stocked, wonderful kitchen. And lots of the kids that come for our workshops bring their water bottles. Why don't we just sort of focus on that? So we just made up a sign explaining why it was that we weren't going to be supplying them anymore. To took the canister that used to hold the cups away.
Yeah.
And encouraged people to come in and grab a glass, and we haven't really had too much trouble since then. It's been pretty easy, so yeah, we just went for that instead.
Just goes to show how sometimes you just take an option away and people's habits change almost instantly.
Yeah.
Because there are so many solutions around us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we just hadn't really considered it. You sort of roll on doing what you've always done. And so we would roll on buying cups and things and just didn't really consider that we could do something a different way and then...
And save money.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was really great. Yeah.
Another thing I thought was quite effective is... Right, just along from the water dispenser, it's a little display saying how certain plastics and certain packaging, how long it lasts for, before it breaks down.
So that's quite so cool they relate to our pledges. They show how long each thing takes to break down that you receive in your kids or adults pledge. I mean, and I didn't know this, I had to look it up, but I mean, how long does something take to break down? And especially if it's breaking down with other rubbish, it takes even longer because it doesn't have dirt and worms and, you know, all that stuff that you need for things to decompose. And it's actually quite frightening when you look at it and you think, oh my goodness, if I'm producing 4 pieces of Glad Wrap and 3 shopping bags a week and I'm one person. Yeah, and I mean, it only takes a quick Google to see some of the damage that's happening in areas of the world. And it's really heartbreaking to see some of the stuff that's happening, especially with our marine life and that kind of thing. Yeah. So sometimes it's just letting people know that this is what happens when you do this and here's the solution, and they say, oh well, I'm happy to give the alternative a go, but without the knowledge they wouldn't have sort of arrived there on their own. So it's really good to sort of, I don't know, educate and encourage people and say this is just a really easy way that you can tackle one particular problem.
Yeah. And it's great to have that support, you know, that a community centre can provide that support, because often all it is just a little nudge to help people get going. So,
You
know, and a community centre can kind of put that out to the community on on a wider scale. So.
Yeah, and it's less naggy than like a friend doing it.
Yeah.
Or leaving some sort of passive aggressive thing in your letterbox.
Yeah.
We ran a kids' workshop in the last school holiday break. We did smoothie making.
Oh, yes.
Which was so much fun. The kids had a really good time, and so we got a whole lot of fruits and vegetables so we could try and make the smoothies different colours. And the kids were so receptive to the thought of making something colourful and fun, and they got to chop everything up. But it wasn't a packaged food, and they knew that they got energy from it and that kind of thing. So it was really fun for us to then see the kids getting excited about trying something different at home. And and most kids have the equipment that they would need at home to be able to make that. And it was just a lot of fun rather than doing something, you know, really sugary, and saying that I ran a gingerbread decorating class this time around. But, you know, it's really cool getting kids on board and teaching them a little bit about what they're putting in their bodies and that kind of thing. And it was a lot of fun, and we put all the extra smoothie from the sort of dregs of the blender in one big cup, and at the end everyone got a bit of surprise smoothie, and it was a lot of fun. So, it was a bit grey by the end.
But
that's the kind of stuff we love running here. It's exciting, and it makes us feel like our jobs are really worthwhile when we hear people's positive feedback and that kind of thing.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing all those words of wisdom with us. And it's so great to hear about all the things you're doing. And we wish you all the best for the future. And
thank you.
We're only 6 weeks into the boomerang bags, and you've already made 300. So
that's amazing.
I'm sure that's going to grow.
It's very exciting. Yeah. Hope so.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot.